Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is an interesting time in our beloved Commonwealth. It's a challenging time in many, many parts of the Commonwealth as well. I saw some photos the other day of Governor Glenn Youngkin and the First Lady, Suzanne Youngkin, meeting with first responders, meeting with people who were dealing with this terrible hurricane that has impacted our state. And I'm very, very happy to say that Governor Glenn Youngkin is joining us. Governor, as always, thank you for making some time for us.
Jeff, great to be with you, and thank you for your very warm thoughts with regards to the suffering that so many Virginians are going through today. Listen, Hurricane Helene was a huge storm, and she hit us hard. And I first just want to thank the amazing heroism from our first responders, who we pre-positioned with extensive capabilities set up in advance of the storm, and they performed in such memorable, heroic ways. Jeff, we had two Virginians who tragically lost their lives, but we had over 70 life-saving rescues that were performed by our Virginia State Police and our Virginia National Guard and our Swiftwater Rescue crews from all over the state, from our local law enforcement, sheriffs and police departments, from our EMS personnel, firefighters, from our VDOT personnel. I mean, it was an all hands on deck moment in order to rescue Virginians who were being inundated truly by this historic storm. And then we find ourselves in a moment where we still haven't stabilized people's lives. We have electricity that is now almost all come back online, but not yet. We've got cell service that still is not fully restored. We want to make sure that Virginians who need access to health care get access to their necessary treatments if they have them, or oxygen supplies or pharmaceuticals if they need them. And then finally, we have people who've just lost everything. And so the tremendous work that we've been doing to get people into a warm, safe place to stay, with sometimes having to provide literally clothing because it's all been destroyed, warm meals, and of course, starting the process now of assessing the recovery. It's been an inspirational week. It's been a tragic week, and I'm so proud of the way Virginia has reacted.
Well, Governor, it was inspiring to all to see you and the First Lady there. Some of the photographs that I was able to view from the Virginia State Police high above these waters, giving indications of what they were doing and all of the rescue efforts. It is amazing. And I know it meant the world to those first responders for you to meet with them on a personal basis. You talk to the first responders, but boy, you're also dealing with those folks we just mentioned. They've lost, in some cases, everything. Were you able to provide a little bit of hope to them? And are there going to be resources available, state, federal, et cetera, for them to access?
Yeah, let me just begin with the tragic circumstances that exist. Jeff, there was a woman who we met as we were in an area where people's homes had literally just been washed away. And she came up and said, "Governor, I've lost everything. I don't have any clothes. I don't have any place to go. I don't have any food." And what was amazing to see was the community just wrap around her, and the state emergency management personnel, along with the city manager from that part of Giles County, from the church support groups, just put their arms out and provided her with a safe place to stay, a warm meal, clothes, and we'll start the process. But at the beginning, it's just providing people those basic necessities. That is what has been most heart-wrenching, but also most uplifting, is to see us react. The support is big. So, of course, the state has moved in very strongly on a preemptive basis up front to get ready, but also flooding the zone with our Virginia Department of Emergency Management personnel, VDOT personnel to clean and clear roads. We've had folks from the Department of Corrections, inmates, come and serve nearly 10,000 meals. We've had folks from the Virginia Department of Health just mobilize to make sure people can get access to the health care that they need. And I have been so encouraged by the selfless nature of state government and local government. And now, over the weekend, we were able to receive the declaration of emergency from the federal government. And so when we all of a sudden see those resources pile in as well, and then, of course, this morning we were able to announce the approval of our application for a major declaration of emergency, again, from the federal government. And that unloads even more resources. So there is an enormous amount of support and help in the region. I would say if folks are interested in supporting charities that are very active, of course, what we've seen is an organization called God's Pit Crew out of Danville. It went to work immediately with resources, and that has been an amazing step for folks. Of course, there's lots of other places between churches that have gone to work as well, but it's been an all-hands-on-deck effort, and I'm just so proud of what's happening. It's going to be a long recovery, Jeff. With the extensive nature of the damage to the roads and bridges and homes that have been lost, business interrupted in a big way, we're going to have a long recovery, and I have great confidence in Virginians' ability to recover, and we're going to have to continue to work together. It's not a 24-hour, 48-hour effort. This is going to be weeks and months, if not years, in order to get everybody back to where they were.
Well, kudos to you, Governor Youngkin, for getting that the paperwork, if you will, to the federal government for those declarations of emergency ahead of time, really being in front of this. And you're talking about all the wonderful people in our beloved Commonwealth coming together. This is what we've always called the Virginia way. We just, you know this, we help those people that need help, and we're not looking for a lot of glory. We just do what needs to be done. I want to ask you for a moment to pivot to an executive order that that I have in front of me, and I am just so thrilled to read this. You know, and my listeners know, there are a couple of issues that are near and dear to my heart. Those in our community who have disabilities and special needs, and as a former police officer, anybody who has ever served as a first responder, you've been really head and shoulders above any other governor that I've seen supporting each of those areas. I want to talk a little bit about this first responder wellness office, this Executive Order 38. Can you let us all in on what that is and why you decided now is the time to do this?
Well, of course, nothing is more important than supporting our first responders. And of course, has there been a better example of their impact and heroism than just over the course of this last week? I mean, Jeffrey, you saw the Virginia State Police helicopter units evacuating patients from a roof of a hospital in Tennessee, sure, and saving lives. And we watched our just unbelievable Virginia National Guard helicopter crews rappelling into rushing water and rescuing people off of the hoods of their cars. And so this is a group that needs our support and deserves our support. And the reality, of course, is that when you constantly are placed in those kinds of circumstances, it takes a toll. It takes a toll on not just your physical health, but your emotional health as well. And that's why this executive order is so important, because it formalizes many of the informal things that we are doing. We first are establishing an Office of First Responder Wellness. It's so important for us to recognize that doing things off the corner of our desk oftentimes work but aren't dependable. And I want to make sure that we have a permanent office looking after our first responders' wellness. It second authorizes $3 million of funding for the office to create a grant program to support local agencies and nonprofits to provide the kind of wraparound support that our first responders deserve. And then finally, we're going to have a senior person, a chief coordinating officer, who will work across government at the local level, at the state level, and yes, even drawing into some of the federal resources to make sure that we are bringing together all of our capabilities in a coordinated way to support these first responder heroes. This is a really important effort to permanentize and make much more effective the collaboration and the funding to take care of these folks that take such good care of us.
Well, God bless you for doing that, Mr. Governor. I mean, it just is such, it's an essential thing, Governor Youngkin, and it has been long overdue, and honest to goodness, thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that. You mentioned the national stage, the federal government. As we are recording this, we are in the midst of a port strike. And a mutual friend of ours, Tom Leonard, was with me yesterday and said, Jeff, we could see prices going through the roof because these ships with containers are sitting at the ports. They're not being offloaded, and we're not going to have things in the store. What's your sense of that? And will President Biden step to the plate? Because he does have the power, if I understand it, to get these guys back to work.
Yeah, I wrote to him last week. I wrote to President Biden and Vice President Harris and urged them in the strongest way possible to call everyone together and avert this strike, and they just didn't do it. And we now see a real economic catastrophe because the impact of having these most important ports shut from Maine to Texas, all across and down the Atlantic coast, around the Gulf Coast, is estimated to cost us between $4 and $5 billion a day. And I think the reality of what is happening may not be fully appreciated until we have a supply chain interruption that possibly could be as bad as we saw at the worst time during the pandemic. And just think about it. Critical pharmaceutical supplies, the critical supply chains for manufacturing, and to have all of the items on shelves that people need, exports of our own agricultural industry that need to be delivered to other places in the United States and around the world. And it's even made 10 times worse by the fact that we have the entire Southeast region suffering from the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, and our ports are shut. President Biden and Kamala Harris can resolve this. They must lead. And I have to say, this is a leadership gut check for them. They must use their executive authority to bring people back to the table. They can use their Taft-Hartley authority and get everybody back to work in a cooling off period. They can avert a massive economic disruption. And can you imagine, here we are moving into the fall with Christmas around the corner, and supply chains are going to be massively disruptive. Inflation is going to present itself again if this thing extends for any long period of time. And this is a leadership gut check for President Biden and Vice President Harris to get this thing back on the rails and to use the authority that has been used before in order to make sure that we don't have extensive economic damage. I must add, Virginia is particularly exposed here. We have 60 ships sitting off the coast that can't unload. And the sad reality is the portion of this national contract that pertains to Virginia has been long done. And so the workers at the Virginia port and the shippers at the Virginia port agreed their part of this over the summer. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why the president and the vice president shouldn't haul everybody back into work, keep things open for a cooling off period, and meanwhile, force a resolution here so that we can keep America and Virginia working.
Well, let us hope that the right things are going to be done in Washington, D.C. Governor Youngkin, I always appreciate you making time, and I know your schedule is packed, but if you've got 60 seconds, please, you tell the First Lady that her Sisterhood Spotlight program is an absolute hit here at the Katz family home. We love it.
Well, thank you. The First Lady and my amazing wife, Suzanne, I think is doing incredible work, and I just so appreciate the efforts that she has made in order to bring the savage results of fentanyl poisoning across Virginia to the forefront of everyone's attention, to make sure that everyone is working hard to protect our children from the evils of social media and what it's done to our kids. And then finally, she just lifts up people all over the state. And I just watched her pray with and hug on people in Southwest Virginia. And I'm just so proud of the work that she's doing.
I love it. Governor Glenn Youngkin. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Governor Glenn Youngkin, thanks so much for...
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
His generosity. I really do. I always appreciate the governor making some time with us. As you picked up, we had to pre-record some stuff with him. He was hitting Fox. I was doing Newsmax and Rosh Hashanah and all this other stuff. Listen, it's all good. It's all good. We got a lot of stuff. Our buddy Brian Maloney is going to be along in a couple of moments. There's terrible fallout from Hurricane Helene, but you notice what's missing? Any coverage in the media. George W. Bush was told he was killing people with his response to Katrina. This, what are you going to do? 327, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. 335, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is, it's Friday Eve. Yes. Oh, I almost said the dreaded T word. I'm sorry. No, it is Friday Eve. Thanks very much to Charles Pyle for taking some of the Glenn Youngkin interview and sharing it with you. It's important stuff. And I just want to pause for a moment before I move on to my dear friend Brian Maloney and pay tribute. I know it sounds a little weird, but I have to. I really do. Charles has elevated the game back in that newsroom 100% in 3 weeks. As simple as that, clear as that, we are so thankful. Or, well, I don't know what to say. I am so thankful that he's in place now, doing great stuff. Gary Hess continues to do great stuff. Sarah Huffman is absolutely contributing some great pieces. We got a solid operation right now, which we haven't had in a long time. I mean, it's been, well, I'll just say it, because I've been here a long time. It's 12 years. We haven't had it in years. So it is great, great, great to hear that. Okay. Enough of that. Let me bring in somebody else who I actually am quite fond of. He's a great guy in terms of offering analysis and insight when it comes to political issues. But he is also, I remind you, truly one of the best talk radio guys I have ever heard, my friend Brian Maloney. Brian, thank you for being here.
Hey, great to be back.
It's good to hear you. Now, let's start with the strike. This ought to be a huge issue. Then we're going to move on to the hurricane, which ought to be a big issue. But what are you sensing here? Because I don't feel that either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris is paying any sort of a price in the media for any of those two events.
No, I mean, that's what's incredible. I mean, what it shows is the power, the sheer power that the media still has to manipulate quite a few minds, maybe not all of us, but enough of us to be able to successfully provide cover for these guys, because this, what's going on right now, is absolutely horrendous. A lot of people are calling the hurricane aftermath, you know, basically a second Maui. I saw that a lot today, and I think that's actually a very apt comparison. And the strike, I think, you know, people just, it's bubbling under the surface. People are starting to worry. I mean, you know, you're hearing about Costco shelves being stripped bare and that kind of thing. So, I mean, but yeah, I mean, imagine if this were a Republican in the Oval Office. If we had a president at all, of course.
Yeah.
Nobody can figure out what's going on there. But if we had that, you'd never hear the end of this strike and how it was that person's fault.
That's right. You and I remember President George W. Bush flying over the flood scene. Oh, my God, he's a terrible human being. We were told that George W. Bush, if I remember, they said he was trying to kill black people in New
yes.
Orleans with Katrina, right? I'm not misremembering that.
They actually said he caused Hurricane Katrina.
That's right. Oh. Oh, my gosh, I forgot about that. And nothing. It's absolute crickets now, man.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, Jeff, and the bottom line is then you have FEMA coming in, right, and telling people, well, you know, you can't have volunteer rescuers that we're going to arrest them. So the guy with the helicopter who's been ferrying people out of the flooded zones, you know, on his own dime, right, if you do it again, we'll arrest you.
Yeah.
Anybody trying to help is turned back, threatened with arrest. That's what they did in Maui. Why do they want people to suffer?
It's a great question. Pete Buttigieg earlier today says no private drones. Now this one I'm going to call, Brian, and you can agree with me or not, but those private drones have cameras, and those cameras can show everybody what the devastation is, and that devastation lies right at the feet of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and that's why Pete Buttigieg says no private drones.
Well, yeah, they don't want anybody to see it, but they also don't want any help in there. And if you've ever been through the middle of a natural disaster, you know that FEMA is your worst enemy. They bring trouble and they bring no relief. And that's exactly what they've been doing for many, many years. So you have that. And if you've lost your home, you can't book a hotel room within, you know, 10, 20, 30 miles or more because FEMA booked them all. They booked entire hotels at a time. So there's nowhere to go. There's no help. And if anyone tries to help you, they're threatened with arrest. Oh, and by the way, here's $750, you know, $750 for your troubles.
That's
right?
Cool.
But, you know, Zelensky gets billions more, billions.
Yeah, well, that's right. Zelensky leaves here with $8 billion. You have Mayorkas today telling us, oh, we don't have any money. FEMA has no money because, well, Vice President Harris and the gang, they decided to spend it all on services for illegal aliens. I mean, this is just, it's insanity, Brian, and I keep waiting for the legacy news media to utter even a peep, and it is dead flipping silence.
Well, and, you know, the interesting thing about this is I saw some people today calling it another land grab like Maui, and maybe it is. I mean, Asheville had been a really hot real estate market, as I'm sure you'd heard all about in recent years. People were flocking there from all over the country. You know, they were even getting the dreaded Californians in there, which is, you know, very, very sad.
Yeah,
and
they ruined everything.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you know, when you're there, you know.
That's right.
That's. You know, so that's where we're at. And the question is this, so if we've wiped out these towns, and I'm not saying they did that on purpose, I'm just saying they're not helping. You know, what is the election impact? You know, are they hoping that these people don't vote? Because a lot of these towns were red, Asheville's mm-hmm. blue, but mm-hmm. I mean... What happens there, right? I mean, North Carolina, the polls are almost dead even.
Right. Right. Now, you know, Brian, here's one of the things that I've got to ask you. Where the very fact that you and I are even asking that question, does that not bother you a little bit that we have to ask that question?
Well, I think it is. I think it's very, very disturbing. And, you know, as we know, they will resort to any dirty trick in the last month. I'm not saying they caused this storm, but what I'm saying is they know how to manipulate the results. And that's, you know, the aftermath. And when there's an election a month away, you have to watch them like a hawk because you know they're up to no good. You know, if their lips are moving, they're lying.
Yep.
And they're up to, they're not there to help anybody ever. And I think we've learned that about Washington through enough of these that, I mean, are people of Maui, they ever come out, you know, okay on the other end of this? No, they're still sitting there in ruins with 1,000 people missing, and that never improved.
That's right. That's right. Brian Maloney is joining us. Brian, let me ask you, obviously we're all laser beam focused on the election that is coming up. Your sense of the J.D. Vance, Tim Walz debate the other night?
Well, I think it was really, really interesting because for a bunch of reasons. But number one, I think J.D. Vance did what he needed to do, and that is to completely shoot down the fake narrative that had been built around him by Democrats, which is that he's some kind of weirdo who does weird things and sick things that they had maliciously attributed to him that were made up, that were just completely fabricated. And just to show, hey, I'm a regular guy who's worked my tail off from nothing to get to where I am, and I got a lot of great ideas. And it was a lot of, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that was really, really important for him to convey in this. On the other hand, what you saw was a guy who did this kind of aw shucks routine. You know, I'm you know, I'm just a regular guy. You know, and I'm a knucklehead. I can be a knucklehead. You know, and like, okay, great, you're a knucklehead. Well, what happens if you become president and you're a knucklehead who makes up tall tales? I you know, so the thing was, he did try to argue substantive points with Vance and try to come across as some kind of moderate. He's an extremist.
Yes, he
does come across as a decent guy, but the facial expressions were just weird. Waltz, the funny looks on his face, and I just think it came from a lack of preparation. You know, if you work with candidates, one thing you do is you put them in front of cameras, and you have, you know, you do practice runs, and then you play back. And, you know, we all dread seeing our video played back to us.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could have kind of pointed to some of that and said, you know, you're making some bug eyes here and some funny looks there. And then he looks sad the rest of the time, which I don't understand why. He just always looks sad. I don't know if that's just, I called it resting sad face, but I don't know, you know. I don't know what that was there. So he came across as probably a decent guy that you would like, but not ready. You know, and the comparisons to Chris Farley, the late comedian, you know, I mean, very, very, except that Chris Farley was a hysterical comedian. And then this isn't funny because, as you know, our future's at stake.
I don't know. I thought looking at Walls, I did have that sense that at any moment he could share with us that he lives in a van down by the river. And,
absolutely.
Right. He would. Hey, was the Jack Smith 167-page filing, was that the big October surprise, do you think?
Well, if it was their big surprise, I hope they realize how disappointing that is, because that is just being seen clearly immediately as for what it is, and that is a tactic to manipulate the election 1 month out. I think anybody can see through that. And now it's abundantly clear, if it wasn't a million times before, that a character like Jack Smith is only in this game to score political points, and there's no legal basis for anything that he's doing. So I don't think this moves the needle.
No.
I really feel like the true October surprise is something else.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it was Hillary that was alluding to some kind of surprise coming, and I'm sure they've got something. I think the next month will be a roller coaster where we are going to be, you know, going up and down every single day. We're going to be just, I feel like people are approaching this election day with dread. The whole country is. I think it's just dread. I think we dread elections now because they're miserable experiences, and it's just something to get past and hope we stay in one piece. That's where we're at now. It's sad.
No, it is very sad. I also want to share with you, Brian, I read that the 167 pages, and I felt sad after that because I thought, well, if this what you guys were banking on, I'd say you laid an egg. All it says is it was a circus at the beginning, Mr. Smith is still the ringmaster. I don't think it changes a single solitary vote. Everybody who hated Trump before that, if they even bothered to read it, nobody reads. We don't read 167 characters, let alone 167 pages now.
Exactly, Jeff. We consistently have 5 to 7% of the vote that say they are still undecided. They are not reading Jack Smith's 167-page report to decide how they're going to vote. They're going to the supermarket to see if they can still afford eggs, right, and milk,
that's right,
and bread.
That's right.
And that's what that's about. So, you know, and if they can afford those things, they'll take that into consideration in their vote. But they are not reading Jack Smith's report. You know, this is why the people in Washington, they think that everything revolves around their little thing that they've got going there. And out in the real world, it's about survival. You know, it's about I able to pay my bills this month? Can I pay them next month? That's where we're at. Not some report. You know, two different worlds we're living in here.
It is. It is. One is us on planet Earth. The other one's a bizarro world. But anyway, Brian, do me a favor. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media, please.
Yeah, sure. As usual, I would love to have your listeners join me at facebook.com/mediaequalizer. Facebook.com/mediaequalizer. One word, media equalizer.
Nobody better. Thank you, my friend. That is Brian Maloney. He is the media equalizer now. He's been the media equalizer for years. You need to be following Brian again. Over on Facebook, look for Media Equalizer. You are going to love. I mean this. I've been a friend with Brian for a couple of decades now, and I've been a fan of his work even longer than that. But on Facebook, look for Media Equalizer, and you will not be disappointed. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. 3:52, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. It is a Friday Eve, and the second dude, the vice gentleman, I don't know, whatever his title is, Doug Emhoff, you know, Kamala Harris's husband, he's now being accused of slapping an ex-girlfriend outside the Cannes Film Festival back in 2012. The Daily Mail out of England has the report and says they're relying on the recollections of three of that girlfriend's friends. I don't know if the report is true. I have no idea. But it's out there now. It's also being alleged that there was a settlement of some sort. I read $80,000. Don't quote me on that because I'm not pulling that up in the moment. I think it said $80,000. Some sort of a settlement and a non-disclosure agreement. Gosh, does that sound familiar? Will we convene some sort of a federal grand jury to investigate this? A non-disclosure agreement, if there is one? I mean, it's nuts. But listen, this speaks to Kamala Harris. It speaks to Kamala Harris and her choices. Let's look at her first official choice after she was selected to be the Democrat Party nominee. She selected Tim Walz, who is about three different types of grossly incompetent and he's a knucklehead. Oh, come on, I'm just a knucklehead. You're not a knucklehead. You're a dangerous radical who may, in fact, have some concerning issues with the People's Republic of China. Sorry, this is not a, oh, golly gee whiz sort of a thing. The good news is that Kamala Harris is actually performing worse than Joe Biden. Is it too late for the Democrats now to go back to Joe Biden? Wouldn't that be something? Maybe that's the October surprise. Is some Democrat comes out and says, boy, oh boy, did we screw up? We're sorry. Just forget it ever happened. It'll be like Dallas many, many years ago. Like Joe Biden will come out of the shower and everything will be fine.
Got hairy leg that turned blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight and then watch the hair come back up again.
Well, that's a platform to run on for sure. No doubt about it. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., John Reed is going to be here. Make sure you're here for John. 3:56, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.